CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky.
Welcome back to Fired Up with CJ. Our guest today is Dr. Shane Lopez, the world prominent expert on hope and the author of Making Hope Happen. His website is www.hopemonger.com. I'm Cassandra with CBS Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and Dr. Shane Lopez.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I realize I didn't fulfill my promise on the second segment, and I hope to fill both my second and third segment promise. One of the things that Shane has done is he's worked a lot with kids in school, and let's see if we can combine three things at one, Shane. We'll be super productive. One is I want to find out a little bit about your work in schools. I also want to figure out, you know, you had had an example in your book of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, Yana Jones, who's one of
Yana Jones.
And you're saying he's one of the people that you consider one of the most hopeful folks. And he came through a background that was not so hopeful. And I guess the question is, you know, how do you actually even get someone who has either failed in achieving a goal and they need to do some regoaling, or have just had such a challenging life, to even go get on to the hope cycle? And then tell us also a little bit about the work that you've done with schools.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little bit about that first. We do something called the Gallup Student Poll, which is available in every school district in America. You just have to nudge your principal or superintendent to turn it on. It's no cost. We measure hope, school engagement, and personal well-being every October in America in every school. So we've studied well over a million students in the last 3 years and found that half of them are hopeful. About 33% of them are stuck in life, and about 17% are outright discouraged. So they don't have the basic building blocks of hope just yet. And that's where Yano was. So Yano grew up in a very difficult neighborhood in Omaha and Nebraska, and just really didn't see other people like him, young African Americans, making their way in the world. So he struggled. He got into trouble here and there. He gravitated to sports and met some good coaches who kind of taught him the basic building blocks of hope. But what's amazing about Yano is that now that he's on the other side and he's hopeful, he shares that with 50 students every day. So he works in a program where he's the hope coach, essentially, for 50 students who are trying to make it through high school and get into college. And I talked to him about hope, and you know, he just says you got to teach him when to engage in life and where to make that happen. And that's one of the key recommendations I have for school children and parents and teachers to teach young people, is to teach kids how to construct when-where plans. And that's pretty basic, CJ. Every time you get an assignment, you have to know when you're going to start that assignment and where you'll be when you start it. And it sounds, you know, too easy to work, but it's actually, you know, scientifically proven that when we have these when-where plans, we set these psychological action triggers in our brain, and we're more likely to get things done. And I think that's a great way to get moving, taking the first step to being a hopeful kid or a hopeful person.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that you mentioned in your book, in coaching, one of the ideas is that you say, okay, so you're going to work out, when are you going to do that? But you don't ask the where, like what specifically are you going to be doing and where are you going to do it? And somehow, you say this in your book as well, but somehow stating it out loud or writing it or sharing it with someone else actually adds to your commitment, because you've made it, you know, you've set it out into the universe, and the likelihood of them achieving it is way higher.
Yeah, so you set these mental images up in your brain. The other thing I want to say about Yano, though, is he's a great example of intrusive, hopeful support. And I think we need these people in our lives who are not scared to get up in our business when we're failing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple of people in my life, and I tell them, you know, when I'm not behaving like my best self, when I'm not doing the things that I claimed I would be doing, when I'm not living my life in the way that I should be living it, can you step in and get me right back on track? And they'll do it. They'll do it. So they're hopeful people who I've given permission to them to be intrusive supporters. And that's what Jano has. That's the kind of relationship he has with these students. And I think we need those relationships, you know, with one another more often, where we say, you know what? You're doing this stuff when you said you'd be doing that stuff. You're not working hard on this, and you're kind of dilly-dallying and working on that. How can I help you get back on track? So we need intrusive hope mentors in our lives who step in with our permission, not permission today, but we said 6 months ago they could do it, you know? So when they step in today, we've got to say, oh, gosh, I did give you permission, didn't I? and then they are, you know, allowed to really kind of kick our butts and get us back on track.
That's brilliant. You know, as a coach, I have that permission. It's like a tacit permission already. So I go through and say, well, you know, you said that, but I don't really see you doing that, or I don't really feel energy around it, or you don't see, you know. But I love the idea of giving that permission to certain people, certain trusted, hopeful people to kind of keep you accountable. I think when coaching, I call it an accountability coach, getting someone accountable and moving forward.
Okay, so we desperately need that.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you talk about regoaling, and I was really curious because, you know, there are times when you achieve a goal and you just don't – it's not happening. And so when you're in that point, what research or what wisdom do you have from talking to folks about, you know, do you give up on your initial dream, or is it just a planning issue that you haven't thought about enough pathways?
It might be both. You know, it just depends. So – you know, as a kid, I was a pretty good baseball player, and, you know, I wasn't wishful in my thoughts about playing, you know, at higher levels. You know, I was pretty good. But at some point I realized I wasn't good enough. So do I spend more and more energy and time chasing a goal that will never come true, will never be realized, or do I dedicate my efforts to other things? And that's very challenging. It's very challenging as individuals to kind of shift focus, but it's also think about people who are leading us. So whether they're leaders in our family or leaders in our church or leaders in our business, if someone is taking you down a path for months and months and months, and then everyone knows, hey, we're going down the wrong path, and that person's not courageous enough to say, you know what, you're right, we have to re-goal, then you can lose a lot of time, energy, resources, a lot of years. You know, chasing a goal that will never come true. So we do have to, regoaling is where hope meets courage. We have to look honestly at what's happening in our lives and say, was I right 2 years ago when I said I was going to do this? Or do I know more now that really gives me enough information to say I need to change the goal by 2 degrees or I need to change the goal ever so slightly? So in regoaling, it's not typically saying, oh, we were going north for 5 years, now we need to go south. It's usually, hey, we were going north, now we need to go northeast, and we'll be there.
I see. So the concept isn't about just like, oh, just drop it, forget about it. Or in some cases it is. Like maybe you just said, well, I like baseball, but I'm not going to be a major league player. So, you know, I'm done.
Now I coach my son, and I got to tell you, I have more fun interacting with these kids as a coach than I ever did playing the game. So I'm really, you know, I'm kind of reborn in the sport in a sense, just through coaching. And I don't long for having not played the game or wanting to do something else. So you can meet your needs in other ways. And oftentimes I think we dupe ourselves into thinking there's only one way to meet our emotional needs. And actually we can find many different ways.
I totally would want you to be my children's coach. Could you come here in Seattle and coach my kids? Like a hopeful coach, that would be, because there's so many coaches out there. I'm sure you see stuff out there that is just horrifying.
Oh, it is. It is. And you know what? I mean, we have to be better than that. As parents, teachers, coaches, mentors, you know, our children, gosh, they deserve so much more. From us. They deserve us when we step into this place where we're actually trying to meet the needs of kids. They deserve us to put our egos aside.
Exactly.
They deserve for us to do that. And too many of us have a hard time. We're getting too many needs met while we're on the field rather than meeting the needs of other people.
That is the best way of describing it. Now, all you need to do to convince these parents who are all high strung and yelling and screaming and having popping veins out of their forehead is to, you need to do a little market research report. So you're like, oh, funny. I actually just wanted to share with you a report. Do you realize that 70% of the parents...
Really, I think all we have to do is have like a candid camera, take pictures of them, and then show them the picture at the end of the game. Do you really want to be this guy?
Exactly. What are you doing to your children when you
exactly.
do that?
Exactly. Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
This has been a fantastic. It has been so such a pleasure talking to you and just hearing about your research and hearing about your ideas. I assume that you started off with a hopeful as a hopeful person. Is that true?
You know, I think so, but I got to tell you, when I was a little kid, second and third grade, I was a very anxious kid. So I think I was concerned about the future more than hopeful about the future.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, I started hanging out with other kids that kind of had a handle on life a little better than I did, and they helped me figure it out.
Wow. So it's one of those things, like you said in the book, that hope can be taught, learned, and that you say, and that you're doing with schools. It can be taught, it can be learned.
Oh, yeah. And
learn it if you don't have it now. Yeah,
it's contagious. If you can hang out with some hopeful people, make that happen. That way you can learn from the
best and the brightest. Best and brightest hopeful stars. Thank you again for being here. Thank you, Cassandra, so much for recording, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking to superstar spiritual luminary Richard Moss, and he is going to be talking about radical aliveness. Everyone, have a great weekend.